for Vox, bringing you the exciting new sound of the Vox Wah-Wah pedal. Let the electric prunes demonstrate the difference. Play it prunes first without the Wah-Wah pedal. Now, listen to the difference when you push that Vox Wah-Wah pedal down. You can even make your guitar sound like a sitar. It's the now sound. It's what's happening. That's why the Electric Prunes, Animals, Herman's Hermits, Paul Revere and the Raiders, Stones, the Seeds are all using the Vox Wah-Wah pedal, and it works with any amplifier. If you're a professional musician or want to sound like one, get with the new Vox Wah-Wah pedal at your Vox dealer now.
As demonstrated on Rumbletone Radio Agogo, heard Wednesdays from 3 till 5 p.m. here on CITR.
What does it mean to be sexy? I don't know. You'll have to find out by tuning in to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM, Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock. Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM CITR.
People that you meet wanna
welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. After all, this is our second show. I'm Caroline McGillivray, and this is the show that we talk about all things sexy. Tonight's show focuses on sex for sale, in particular, survival sex in Vancouver's downtown east side. Now, you're probably wondering, why are we covering something so dark on the Sexy Show? And the answer is there's some absolutely amazing organizations and people who are making huge strives to make positive changes in the lives of women who participate in survival sex. And people are talking about it. With the Olympics coming up, this is a very popular topic, what to do with Vancouver's downtown east side. Our mayor, Gregor Robertson, is focused on helping the homeless, while others are talking about individual groups of people. Just this afternoon, there was a roundtable discussion between different agencies, government officials, and many more who gathered together. And that is a couple people that we're going to be chatting about in the studio to find out what happened at the discussion. But first, we are going to be chatting to Laurel Irons, who is the program coordinator for the Mobile Access Project. The Mobile Access Project just turned 5. Laurel, thank you for being on the show. Oh, and I cannot hear you on the show. I think we're having a technical difficulty here. Laura, go ahead. I can hear you, but it's not going on the show. One more time.
Hi.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you.
Oh, good.
Welcome for being on the show, and thank you for putting up with my technical difficulties.
Oh, no problem.
Usually my old co-host, Julia, used to handle all the engineering with that part. So this is a new thing for me. But happy birthday to MAP. I think that's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, we do too.
I think it's awesome. I can't believe it's kind of wild. Like last week, we talked all about social media on our show and how you can use it for your sex and dating life. And what I think is interesting is that you and I used to be roommates when we were like 18 years old and we found each other on Facebook. And ironically, as we're chatting about this afternoon, we've both ended up working with a lot of the same women in the downtown east side. A long time ago, I used to be on the board at WISH, Women Information Safe House, when they were approached from the city to partner with PACE, Prostitution Alternative Counseling and Education, to start a mobile access project for women in the sex trade. And just yesterday, I got that message from you saying that MAP was celebrating its 5th birthday, which is so cool.
Yeah, it's great. It's exciting, and I am thankful as well for the new venues that we have to get that word out there, and I think we've come a long way in connecting with people, so it's exciting.
I think it's really exciting, too. So tell us, what is the MAP project?
Yeah, the Mobile Access Project, we also call it the MAP van, because we have an outreach van, and we're out at night, every night of the year, between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., so these are the hours where typically other services are closed. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, 5 years ago, that was the intention, to start the project when other services weren't available for women. So specifically, we're serving women that are on the street, so street-based sex workers or survival sex workers. And we drive all over Vancouver. We visit the common strolls, you know, but we'll also go into areas where we think women might be working. We have a route, and we also have girls know our number, and they can call us, and we'll go and visit them.
And is that for safety? So what exactly do you do when you meet up with them on the route?
Yeah, definitely. It's a health and safety project.
Okay.
So we're giving out harm reduction supplies, so things like condoms and lube, really basic first aid, wound care, and that kind of thing. Providing support or referrals to women as we see them. So, you know, we stop and we can talk to women. They can get on the van if they want respite from the street for a while, so they can actually sit down. We have coffee and juice, and sometimes we have food from WISH Shopping Center. We'll get food from time to time as well. So women can come on the van and warm up for a while, have something to drink. If there's something going on in their lives and they need some support around something, or if they're looking for a shelter or different things we can connect them with, and we can make those referrals as well.
I think that's great. And a lot of the workers for MAP, for the Mobile Access Project, a lot of them have been sex workers before, have they not? Or at least...
Definitely. Yeah, we have a strong peer-based component. So for sure, what that means is that a lot of people that are hired as the peer support worker, mm-hmm. What that means is that they have, they're coming from a place of understanding from their own lived experience. So, you know, having sex work experience or street experience or something like that. And for a lot of people, that might have been their first job as such. And, you know, so there's a real training and mentorship component as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of girls, it's self-identified women that can work with the van. So a lot of women that have started with MAP have gone on and are continuing now in the field, supporting and providing outreach to the same population of women, or have expanded to different populations, but have definitely grown in their outreach work and, you know, just done amazing things as well. So that's mm-hmm. really exciting to see.
What are some of your favorite stories, like just maybe one client in particular who might have started off as a client and started working as a peer support and has gone on? Can you tell us one of the stories?
Well, definitely. I think the first person that comes to my mind was somebody that was there at the beginning of the project, and her name is Sherry. She started as a support worker, and I hope she's okay that I'm talking about her now.
You can change your name if you need to.
But she's gone on now. She just does amazing work. She's still involved with PACE, which is our partner in the project.
Another great organization.
Yeah, and she's now what's called a safety coach. So she's, you know, really actively out there to give safety training, not just to survival sex workers, but also to other service providers that are working with this population. So, yeah, and she's done amazing things.
Who becomes a sex worker?
Oh, geez. Anybody. And what we are talking about now are survival sex workers, but of course there's so many different facets of the sex industry, and I think what most people think of, you know, are the street-based sex workers or survival sex workers.
But that's only about 20%, isn't it, of the actual sex work that's done in Vancouver?
Yeah, exactly. It's not everybody, but unfortunately they are the most visible and become, you know, the most stigmatized and the most vulnerable because of that. But yeah, definitely it could be anybody. I mean, we're meeting women who are, of course, mothers, sisters, daughters, you know, the boys out there are, they could be fathers themselves, and, you know, there's lots of stories that people have. So we've met people, you know, a lot of people will think that survival sex workers get there because, you know, of they maybe have made poor choices along the way or had a lack of options along the way, and certainly that can be the case, but, you know, sometimes something can happen in a person's life that's totally unexpected, and sometimes people have nowhere to go or maybe lose everything. And you know, there's a saying that we're all a paycheck away from the street kind of thing. But,
it's true.
You know, like
especially
it's something we can take for granted.
No, it's true. We can't take anything for granted. It's really possible based on certain circumstances. I think just about anybody could become a survival sex worker, depending on what was going on in their life at that time.
Yeah.
I know years ago I read a study from the University of Victoria where it actually stated the age of entry into life on the street, not necessarily sex work, but into the street entrenched, was 12 in BC and 14 across the country in terms of the introduction.
Yeah, I've seen numbers like that as well, and it's shocking, you know, but it's reality, and unfortunately... I think that I've seen something that said that the average age of entry into sex work, or maybe, I'm not sure if it was the sex industry in general or survival sex, but was 14. And, you know, I mean, but even there, like, there's people that are getting involved in their 40s and 50s. So
that's true.
We have to be able to open our understanding too, and be able to provide support to women from all walks of life, people from all walks of life.
Mm-hmm. I imagine with the Mobile Access Project, you probably see a lot of the women, and sometimes they're probably a first point of contact for a bad date, which it's interesting. I guess we should explain to our listeners out there that survival sex workers' version of a bad date definitely varies drastically different than, well, in my personal life anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've had a lot of bad dates, so.
Yeah. Yeah, we have what we call the red light alert sheet, but also is called the bad date report.
Okay.
And what that means for a sex worker is maybe it was a by date, you know, that's like a transaction with your customer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something's gone wrong, and especially at the survival sex industry level, you know, oftentimes sex workers don't have the opportunity to really negotiate their prices or safe working conditions and that kind of thing because
mm-hmm.
they're out there on the street, they're in dark areas and industrial areas, and things happen so quickly, you know, and it's really hard to get that crucial information about what that person might be like that you're with. And then, you know, something might go wrong, and then the red light alert sheet is there to let other sex workers know about certain details that will help them to recognize maybe a car or a person or something like that, so the same thing doesn't happen to them.
I think that's really good.
Yeah, and it's done in conjunction with a number of agencies that are out there, and, you know, the police are involved as well. If there can be a report made, that's something that we can do, is help women follow up if they want to press charges, or if there's something to be made known to the police, if there is a violent offender that, you know, if we have the information, then we can do something about it, hopefully. But also, I think being out there, we do, because we're out every night,
mm-hmm.
overnight, oftentimes we are that first point of contact. And so, yeah, for a woman to even just be able to, yes, give us that crucial information that we can share, but also to have somebody to talk to, and, you know, if there has to be a call made to 911 for emergency services or anything like that, you know, referrals on to supports later, like counseling, or, you know, making sure she has a place to sleep or anything, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a really big part of what we do.
I think that's fantastic. With the recession, I know sometimes donations come, it's harder to get donations coming in at this time. I know because I do a lot of charitable work as well.
Mm-hmm.
How can people donate to you if they're interested? Are they able to donate online, or should they just contact WISH directly, or is there a website where they can find out more information to volunteer?
Yeah, the best thing to do would be to go to the WISH website. It's got all the information as well as contact information. And so that website is wish-vancouver.net.
And I think that's fantastic. WISH, when I started back in 2000 volunteering in the downtown east side, they were feeding about 150 survival sex workers now. And they just moved into the new space. I believe it was in November. So they're doing well, but they've been doing such great work for so many years, and I'm excited that the Mobile Access Project just keeps growing.
Yeah.
Let's hope the donations keep coming in.
Yes, it is great.
Well, thank you very much, and enjoy celebrating that birthday, and thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Up next, we're going to be chatting to Mandy Wan and Ali Khan about what happened today at that roundtable discussion. So welcome to the studio, you two.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So tell me about this. You're taking a class at SFU. So tell me what the class is about in about 50 words or less.
Well, our class is in the Simon Fraser University, and basically our class is about applied communication and social issue. So our group decided to focus on the issue of the sex trade industry in Vancouver.
Okay. And when you say sex trade, do you mean, as Laurel was talking about, where it is survival sex work, or is it sex trade as in all across the board, like in terms of like the escort agencies, the massage parlors? Some people view stripping as sex trade as well. What is the definition for the group that you chose to study?
Well, for our project, due to like the size of the group and the time that we are given, which is a couple of months, we decided just to focus on basically survival sex workers. We do understand there are different viewpoints and perspectives on how many facets there are in, you know, sex trade and also prostitution, but we decided just to focus on survival sex workers, street-based usually.
I think it's a pretty big topic, so I wouldn't say you just try focused on that. Yeah. You've done quite a great job, and you guys have quite a buzz going around the city right now, so it's quite fascinating. I got to meet you guys when you came into, because you wanted to speak to some of the women directly, about what they thought in terms of the sex trade and what changes should be done, which I thought was a really fascinating thing. So we had you come in to Beauty Night and met with you guys and went through orientation and got to know some of the women. So some of the women who have exited the sex trade, we had you chat with them about what their viewpoints. And Alican, how did you find that? Because as a man, I wonder, like, what was your perspective before you started, like, this project in terms of the sex trade?
I think before, I was really a blank slate. I didn't really understand the issue completely.
Okay.
And, you know, because of our preliminary research, sort of looking at different media outlets and internet and things like that, we were able to just get a basic understanding of the issue. So I would say that, you know, I wasn't necessarily on a side. I knew that obviously there was a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But coming down to Beauty Night and actually getting to meet sex workers was definitely a real eye-opener.
And what did you learn?
I learned that the best way to put it is that coming from my background, I can say Mandy's, ourselves, we're students.
Mm-hmm.
We are in a privileged position, I would say. And, you know, being able to come down and, you know, see how other people, the things that other people have to go through.
Okay.
And some of the things that, you know, we take for granted definitely get put into perspective. Sort of certain basic human rights and things of that nature, yeah.
So besides, obviously, shelter, because that's a big one, which there's a huge, just through the city right now, just in terms of homelessness, it's a big one.
Yeah,
what other things came up, like, in terms of when you say basic rights?
I think just, for me, I think it was basic rights under the law, I think. Being able to, if we're going to focus on survival sex workers, to able to come forward when you've been assaulted or, you know, come forward when you've been harmed in any way. And I think that that's something that that if it happens, it's not being acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Okay, by the police or
by the police, who? Yes. By the police and, you know, the court system as well.
Okay. You mean in terms of that they've come forward or... Sorry, I'm just trying to follow on here.
Yes.
That's okay. So when they come in, they've been sexually violated or sexually assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
And if they decided to come in and have a forensic exam, for example, what would be next, basically? Like, do you find that the police aren't very supportive in terms of where it's difficult for them to make these... to basically take that step to go and file a report?
I think from, you know,
from
the,
what you,
from
what
the
you...
people that we've spoken to and what happened today, the feedback we got at the roundtable today is that that's what's happening.
Okay.
I think the Picton trial is definitely a good example of that, where the police sort of didn't do anything when these women were going missing.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't, taking action. And... forgive me, I'm not an expert on the Picton trial by any means, but I definitely think that there are those barriers there that may prevent, you know, survival sex workers from, you know, approaching the police or getting help that they need if they're being assaulted. Or...
yeah, I definitely agree with Ali Khan. Just like this, our experiences of interviewing with someone else, the others. We think that, you know, people are afraid to go towards the police.
Okay.
Because there are experiences of police harassing sex workers, and there are misconceptions, and some police officers may be informed and have these misconceptions that...
What kind of misconceptions?
Just kind of like misconceptions, maybe in what another person would have. They just think that crime and... sex work go hand in hand. They just think maybe sex workers don't deserve, they don't have the right because they are doing that kind of work, and so they don't take the sex workers seriously when they do come up to them and say that they're sexually harassed.
So you think that the perception that you got from a lot of the agencies and people through this and the women themselves were that that they get sexually, when they get sexually harassed, it's almost like an attitude where they're judged, where it's like, oh, you deserve that because this is what you do for a living or to survive. Is that
I can't say for all the organizations, just my personal experience with interviewing with certain sex workers, that was the experience that they have.
Okay.
If not even with just police officers, I think many members in the society have misconceptions about sex work, and sex workers are not taken seriously.
I agree.
Even with doctor's offices.
Yeah.
That they go into doctor's offices saying that they are abused, they ask for medicine, you know, doctor may not prescribe them with the right amounts or right medicine just because they might think the sex workers are lying. And I think that's a serious problem.
In terms of things like, for example, addiction, or are we talking like STIs, sexually transmitted infections?
Well, an example that I had with an interview with another individual, she mentioned to me that because sex workers do get, you know, they have bad days, they do have experiences of being abused, they ask doctors for medicines such as painkillers or morphine. For doctors might think they don't need such a big amount, but they actually do. And that leads to them, sex workers, turning into other drug abuse because to ease the pain that they suffered.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In terms of the women that you got to interview, how was that actually? Like, did you spend like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, like, or did it vary depending on the interview? And what did you learn?
For me personally, the interview with the individual was... the problem, I think the police issue really opened my eyes.
Okay.
Because, you know, you think that you can turn to police when there is a violent problem.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, they might be the one that's causing the problem, or they might not listen to you. And in that case, that's the first thing you do when someone's violently abusing you. That's the first person you think of. If you can't turn to that person, who else can you turn to? And that really opened my eyes through the interviews.
Okay. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of with the police, though, I know a few years ago there was Dave Dixon, who from the Vancouver Police Department, who's no longer, he's retired now from there, and he's working at another organization, but he was down there for a long time, and the women actually created a petition actually to bring him back because they really liked him because they could relate to him.
Mm-hmm.
He was working out of the safety office for quite a long time, and he's actually one of our board members for Beauty Nights, so
yeah.
I might be slightly biased on that one because I think he's pretty awesome, he's done a lot of really good work. Did you find there was, what were some of the good works that were being done by some of the agencies and in terms of with the women, did you find?
I think that, just to go back to the police point for a second, that at the round table we had, while there was criticism of the police, there was also praise, that there are a few good police officers out there that do try to do their part, like Dave Dixon. like you just mentioned. In terms of the actual agencies that were there... there was the Aboriginal Women's Action Network, which from what I got from them today, that they're a fantastic network for Aboriginal women who are especially affected by this issue, and they seem very they're very supportive and very very upfront with their views on the issue of prostitution in Vancouver, definitely. And who else was there? There was
First.
First, who I believe is on the side of decriminalization.
Yes.
Yes. And unfortunately, we didn't get too much information from First.
Okay.
But again, I think...
What does First stand for? Forgive me.
I'm not quite sure what the acronym stands for. They do support decriminalization.
Okay.
And they are an organization that supports the rights of sex industry workers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just in BC or right across the board?
Vancouver.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we return, we are going to be talking about a few different things, one of them being in regards to that, just in terms of the sex workers, what did you find out, as well as that, what does it mean to legalize and decriminalize? So we started touching on that a little bit, but when we come back after the break, we're going to be talking about that a little bit more. So if you want, you can give us a call in at this time at 604 604- 822-2487. That's 604 UBC CITR. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM.
Now, the Electric Prunes for Vox, bringing you the exciting new sound of the Vox Wah-Wah pedal. Let the Electric Prunes demonstrate the difference. Play it prunes first without the Wah-Wah pedal. Now, listen to the difference when you push that Vox Wah-Wah pedal down. You can even make your guitar sound like a sitar. It's the now sound. It's what's happening. That's why the Electric Prunes, Animals, Herman's Hermits, Paul Revere and the Raiders, Stones, the Seeds are all using the Vox Wah Wah pedal, and it works with any amplifier. If you're a professional musician or want to sound like one, get with the new Vox Wah Wah pedal at your Vox dealer now.
As demonstrated on Rumbletone Radio Agogo, heard Wednesdays from 3 till 5 p.m. here on CITR.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
And we are back in Sexy and Van City Radio. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, where we talk about all things sexy. And speaking of sexy, we've been talking about the sex trade tonight, which may not be quite as sexy as everybody envisioned, especially when it comes to survival sex. We've been talking about that a lot in the first half of the show, and as well as that we continue to do that. I've got Mandy Wong and Ali Khan on from SFU. They've just had a wonderful discussion where it got quite heated this afternoon, I heard. So I thought that was really interesting. But before we get back to that, I did want to touch base on a PSA in terms of the show. There is a, speaking of sex for sale, or shall I say dating for sale, the Federation of BC Writers had a dating auction on Monday night, and you can actually still look up all that stuff. And if you two even are interested in bidding and having a date with me and my old co-host, the lovely Julia Saunders from Juicebox Radio, which was our former show.
I already know which one you're talking about.
What was that?
I already have my eye on another guy writer for the bid.
Oh, really?
I do. I heard about this a long time ago.
Who are you? Who did you bid on?
I can't say. I can't say. Try to be anonymous.
I want to know all the dirty details. You're just seeing all the things that went on that night. It was quite fascinating, actually. Boys kissing boys, girls kissing girls. And on that note, I guess I should have put that song on instead. But on the break, I played Animotions, My Obsession. And at the beginning of the hour, I also played Filthy Gorgeous by the Scissor Sisters, which I thought was a little sexy music to get us in the mood to talk about things that are not necessarily super sexy. But you do know you could be outbid in terms of your bid.
They can outbid me.
They can outbid. Well, Alekin, you could bid for me if you want. All goes to a great cause. It's going to the Federation of BC Writers. So
sounds good.
It's very good. So you can follow my Twitter, Sexy in Van City, and I will be twittering. Or if you're on my feed, you can find Rain Coaster, and you can find out more information about that. Or Mandy Candy. That's the other feed as well.
Oh, good.
If you want to check that out on there. So well, before the break, we're talking about a little bit about some of the agencies and organizations and individuals that were there this afternoon. And I heard rumors both on Twitter as well as just through other people I've actually spoken to. You guys are buzzing around the city.
That's amazing.
Oh, no, it's not amazing with Twitter.
I'm surprised. When you told me about Twitter, I was like, I can't believe someone Twittered. We didn't even notice someone was using their BlackBerry or phone or whatever. So I was a little taken back when you said that.
Well, it could be from that. Or Alekin was mentioning that you've been Twittering all through this entire project, so people are probably following up on that and curious. And I mentioned that there was going to be a discussion, and I got Twitter feed as well, where people were saying that, A, I heard a rumor, confirm or deny, that you kicked out a member of the press.
That is true. We did kick out a member of the press.
Oh, really?
But it's because we never said that this was a public roundtable discussion.
Okay.
We didn't say come one, come all. We did send, you know, specific invites to various organizations that we think should belong in the roundtable discussion, and also students that who are interested in the topic, but we never said anything about press members welcome or media. So that's why we had to ask him to leave. And we're sorry if he felt listening. Offended and, you know, about it. We apologize, but not really.
That's okay. And he's listening. And if he's listening now, they apologized on air.
Yes.
We have it on the podcast. It is documented.
Continue to love us.
And they can listen to the podcast and might be able to get a hold of you once the presentation is made, perhaps. Because probably. You're doing a presentation tomorrow, aren't you, about this? Is it for your class?
Yeah, we are doing a presentation. Just basically the whole summary of our project and the roundtable that has taken place today.
And is that for the press? If I showed up there with a notepad or my laptop or my BlackBerry, could I be Twittering and live feeding blogging?
Well, it's our class, so we probably think that we recognize you right away.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I think I look a little too mature to be a student these days.
You look young, don't worry.
Oh, you guys.
No worries.
So before the break, we were talking about a little bit. We started touching on some of the agencies that were there, and in terms of to decriminalize, legalize, these are words that are thrown around a lot these days. And for people like me, layman, tell me what, in simple language, what is it to legalize, like, prostitution? Like, what does that mean?
Well,
in simple language. Ali, sure. Ken, why don't you take this one?
I'll try. I would just like to say right off the top that we are by no means experts
Definitely.
In defining legalization and decriminalization.
Well, but what did you decide? For based on all your research and things?
Yes, so I will attempt to define it. Legalization, it seemed to us, was sort of a regulation of the sex work industry.
Okay.
With, you could say, government involvement, state-run brothels, things of that nature. With decriminalization, what that meant was either removing or modifying certain aspects of the criminal code.
Okay.
Whether that be modifying the Communicating Act, which I will just explain very briefly, is
sure.
that the act of communicating for the purposes of sex is illegal.
So like solicitation.
Solicitation and that.
Okay.
So certain things like that would have to be modified in order for decriminalization to occur.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So in regards to that, does that... I just want to clarify one more thing. We touched on this in the green room a little bit before the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking, how does that legalization affect in terms of with the Johns, the men who purchase sex or women who purchase sex? How does it affect them if they get caught? Because right now, I believe there's still a John school and things like that going on
mm-hmm.
in Vancouver.
Right.
Where they have to learn about the sex work. I don't know currently, but I do know in the past they've done things like have a wife who's come down with an STI, for example, sitting there and talking about how she contracted that from her husband who was visiting sex workers and came down and made her sick and mm-hmm. also made her child sick because she's breastfeeding. So things like that. So I've heard of stories like that where and just basically so they understand how it affects everybody when they are not practicing safely sometimes and sometimes the risks when they're practicing infidelity against people. But would the decriminalization, would that mean that if somebody got caught that it would just be a slap on the wrist and they could go, you know, basically home to mommy and daddy or to their wife or their partner?
Are you referring to John's
yeah.
at this point? I think that would have to depend on the nature of the decriminalization that would occur.
Okay, and what were some of the things that... Because I know you guys were talking about in terms of this discussion, it wasn't to come up with concrete answers, it was just to get the discussion flowing, to get the mm-hmm. ideas going. Because
mm-hmm.
usually through a lot of ideas, sometimes you can some things fuse through and sometimes you get some really good answers and some wonderful things.
Yeah.
So with that, what did... what were some of the ideas that were going around that room today? I bet it was pretty hot.
Yeah.
Definitely. There were standing ups and yelling and...
Yelling?
Not yelling.
Finger pointing?
No, there was
yelling.
Yeah, like there was yelling, to
yeah.
be honest.
Really?
You know.
What kind of stuff kind of triggered? Like, was it...
I just think, you know, everyone has different perspectives into
okay.
it. There are women that have been previous sex workers, and
mm-hmm.
they do bring their experiences into discussion. You know, women do get emotional when they talk about their past, and if someone doesn't agree on it, of course they would be a little emotional about it. But it definitely was a very... I feel like it was a successful discussion
okay.
because many people brought their viewpoints. I think everyone who was in that room today spoke.
Yep.
No one didn't not speak.
That sounds really good. How many people would you guesstimate were there around?
excluding our group, about 25 people. We find that pretty successful just because...
Well, you didn't make it open to the public and no, it was invite only.
We did invite many organizations. Some chose not to be there, and we really thank the representatives that were there today that are willing to share their opinions with us, especially just us being Simon Fraser students. You know, we're not like big organization organizing a like very big discussion, and we thank their time for this.
It can start with a really small idea, and sometimes small ideas end up expanding to really big things. Mm-hmm. I know I've experienced that with Beauty Night, sometimes with Sexy in Van City, the girls who started that. It's a lot bigger now, a year later. Yeah. It starts with something small sometimes, and it grows. So you have to stop saying just.
Okay, I will.
Thank you. So what do you think, like, personally, like, how have your opinions changed? Let's start with Alican.
Sure. Like I alluded to earlier, I mm-hmm. think that when I started out this process, I was really not on either side, but then not knowledgeable enough to either make that decision.
Yeah, you're saying you're a blank slate.
Blank slate, yeah.
And which is an interesting way to describe that.
I think after the forum today and after all the research we've done and all the interviews we've done, mm-hmm. I can't really pick a side. I definitely understand the problems. I understand sort of the depth of contention within the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to quote my friend Andrew, who's busy working away in our presentation.
He's probably listening. Where
he mentioned today about how, you know, he's firmly entrenched in sort of a neutral position.
Okay.
Because, you know, I don't think it's really a matter of just picking one side or the other.
It's a pretty complicated issue.
It's a very complicated issue, and it's just a matter of understanding the range of opinions and, you know, further just understanding as a person yourself of what's going on out
mm-hmm.
there.
No, it's true. How about you, Mandy?
My personal view, I definitely learned a lot from the discussion. The heated emotions especially really opened my eyes. And, you know, Libby Davies, she was there, and one of the comments she made to our discussion was, I think you really realize now how difficult this is for many people. And since the project has started, I don't think any of us still has like a concrete idea where we stand in the issue, like Alican mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just continue to have different perspectives.
I think it's one of those ones that we're going to continue to learn mm-hmm. like more and more. And it's complicated because there's a lot of issues there. There's the violence a few weeks ago. Julia Saunders and I, who was my old co-host and dear, dear friend, who's going to have a baby any moment, which is pretty cool. And actually, she's vice president of Beauty Night as well.
Mm-hmm.
Jules and I actually went to the Building Bridges conference at BC Women's Hospital and it discussed in terms of mental ill health, violence against women, and addiction, and just sometimes that there's a lot of really wonderful service providers, but
mm-hmm.
our perception in terms of what the conference was just trying to come up with a way that everybody could talk to each other. So what are some follow-up in terms of ideas of continuing to get this conversation going? I know right now it's just for school, but are there some thoughts that perhaps even if you guys don't do it yourself, mm-hmm. that other agencies might be able to take this on and take this to the next level? What are some ideas? I know, Mandy, you're a social media gal.
I'm a social media gal. Everyone Twitter. Twitter your views right now.
Yes, you should.
I think you should, definitely.
SexyInVanCity.com.
M_Candy on Twitter. But I think from the discussion I've seen, I just feel like my personal opinion mm-hmm. is that people really just have to start listening to each other. Yeah, we all have differences. That's the same with history. Everything has differences, I think, but it's also important to see maybe the commonalities that we have among the various organizations.
Okay.
Instead of looking at all the differences, you should maybe not work together, but start listening to each other and maybe not even come up with a solution, but kind of work together to kind of just understand the issue, not just from your own personal standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I think one commonality is that with the various organizations, you want to help sex workers no matter what direction you go. And that's one commonality. And it's so important for them to stick together and not be separate and break apart, because that's not going to help anyone. For me personally, I think.
No, it's not. I don't think so at all. Just out of curiosity, was there anybody there who was pleading for abstinence? And that's just get rid of the sex trade, the oldest profession in the world. Did you get anybody there with that viewpoint?
The viewpoint that was, I think, was there was the, to criminalize, further criminalize prostitution, but
really?
Not...
Really?
But
in what way?
But not... so maybe I rephrase that.
That's all right. It's a strong statement, so she asked, what do you mean by that?
To criminalize the Johns and decriminalize the prostitutes.
Okay. So kind of like the Shame of the Johns campaigns where they used to take down the license plates.
Yes,
in neighborhoods.
That's one thing we mentioned in the discussion, Shame the Johns.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty popular a few years ago. I remember, actually, probably more than a few years ago. But I do remember that, especially in certain areas, and just protect the children and things like that. Mm-hmm. What other ideas came up?
What I just mentioned was definitely the main idea that had to come up. And I think the... What some of the other organizations are doing, such as Pivot, what they're doing right now is sort of...
Pivot Legal Society.
Pivot Legal Society, yes. Is working with sex workers to basically gain them the basic human rights that are afforded to them from the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a few court cases right now where they are trying to get that done, and they're not having much success, but they're, you know, they're still there and they're still trying. So I think definitely they're trying their best to help do what they can. And I think that there's many different ways of, many different ideas out there on how change can occur.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. In terms of sex work, what do you guys think it's about?
Everyone looks at me. What should expect me to answer that question? What do I think sex work is about?
In terms of why do you, and just in, I know
why do people go into sex work?
Actually, the opposite. Why do people purchase sex work?
Oh, why do people purchase sex work? Oh, that's hard to say. As a woman, I don't know. Most misconceptions, it's like, you know, John's purchasing sex for a woman, but you know, there's also women purchasing sex from men also, you know, like, and transgender as well. Maybe to fulfill some kind of loneliness. That's just my personal kind of view. Why would people purchase sex work? Maybe.
I think it depends on the person.
You know, it depends on the person. It's really hard to say. Yeah. You know, everyone does it differently.
Sometimes I think it's about power.
Yeah, it's about power, definitely.
Because it's a straight exchange. Mm-hmm. You know what you're getting if you're paying for it. Whether or not it's because of a violence, like a violent fantasy of some sort, where you don't really want to take that home to, you know, the little kids and... you know, because I mean, sometimes I've read that bad date sheet several times.
Yes.
Or as Laurel described it, the bad date report. And some of those things just make the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first started volunteering in the downtown East Side, and some of the women would come in and talk about their bad dates. And I was just like, oh my goodness, you know, I can't believe they date way more than I do. And then that was when I realized, as she described, that they were actually talking about their clients, though, once you purchase the sex. Mm-hmm. So with that, I thought that was really interesting, but and heartbreaking, some of the stories that, and some of those women, it's really exciting, actually. I count some of them as my friends, some of them actually volunteer and work for Beauty Night now, so it's quite exciting on that level of it. And I know personally I'd like to see just where there's more education earlier on, perhaps. For youth, so then hopefully that not as many women end up in the trade, even though, as Laurel said, and as I mentioned earlier, I really believe it can happen to anybody.
Definitely.
Depending on circumstance in life, whether you're male or female.
Mm-hmm.
I know I might have asked you this before, and I don't believe I've asked it on air, but most of the agencies you spoke with mainly focused on female sex workers, is that correct? Were you able to get a hold of Boys R Us or any of the other ones that work with the boys or peers that does have male component as well?
I think that, as Mandy was saying earlier, due to sort of the time constraints and the limited resources that we have, that we weren't able to maybe go to all the organizations that we wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the forum and throughout some of the you know, proposals and presentations that we've done, we definitely, right off the get-go, acknowledge that there are a lot of different communities, a lot of different, you know, populations that are affected by this, mm-hmm. including the gay community.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. And I know in Surrey as well, there's a lot where they're thinking of adopting some of the things that Pivot wants as well. Mm-hmm. They're considering it. There was a study that was done through the Surrey Women's Center.
So. Yeah, Pivot was there in the discussion as well, their representatives.
No, I think it's good. Well, what's next for you guys?
What's next for us?
Presentation tomorrow.
Presentation tomorrow. We had a discussion today, and we're staying all night to finish the presentation for tomorrow.
That's so student. I love it. With black coffee. Yeah.
Better get an A.
Well, hopefully things go well. And is there anything that you guys might be making available to the general public, perhaps?
For me personally, mm-hmm. I do want to continue with this issue, just because I was one of the starts with the group with my other fellow members, Nina and Vicky, and also I know my other group member Sarah has a very strong, you know, strong perspectives on this issue as well. Mm-hmm. I just, for the future, I do like to continue. You know, I do want to continue to. I want to follow this issue.
Okay.
And I hope other people can realize, you know, what we come out of this project and the whole point of the discussion mm-hmm. is we want everyone to understand a few points. We want everyone to get the same information that everyone else is getting.
Okay.
Just because we feel like everyone's so separate.
Well, I think it's important too, just in general, whether or not it's in a relationship with, mm-hmm. and whether that, and I believe that communities are built on relationships, even though they're smaller, that sometimes, and sometimes bigger, than just with our partners that we've chosen in our love lives and sex lives. Mm-hmm. But communication is really, really, really key. And the more we can talk about things and hopefully take that communication and put into a plan of action so we can make a difference. And with this upcoming election coming up in May, we've got a few people running for the sex party, like Scarlett Lake, who we've had on Juice Box before. And hopefully I'll have her on Sexy Advanced City coming up soon. But huge advocate in terms of, I believe, for legalization. I'll have to double check on that.
Yeah.
But she's pretty terrific. And there's some other interesting people who that's an issue. And I have this feeling that's going to be one that's going to be talked about with the provincial election mm-hmm. in terms of that. What do you see 20 years from now in terms of the sex trade?
Want to take this, Ali Khan?
To be honest, I think that what we saw today was the divisions on all sides of the issue. And I think that if those divisions continue and organizations don't listen to each other mm-hmm. and work together, then nothing's going to happen. And 20 years from now, it's just going to be the same.
It might get worse if they just start listening to each other.
Worse. Yeah, exactly. So one of the individuals at our roundtable today mentioned that it's time to stop arguing with each other.
And to start listening.
And it's time to start listening, and it's time to start working together, because until that happens, nothing's going to change.
I think that's true. Well, you guys, thank you so much for being on the show, and I hope your presentation goes well tomorrow.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, that wraps up our show for tonight, and up next is Hans von Claus and the Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with, and I have to take a look. Hold still for a second while I look at his shoes. Oh my God, he's got Elvis Gold shoes on. He's grumbling that I always do this to him, and I do. I can't help but have shoegasms over his shoes. Oh, he's saying he loves it. I like that he loves it. Well, up next week, we're going to be talking about the film industry, because a lot of us, especially me, find actors, and sometimes some of us like the power of producers. With all those long hours and crazy lifestyles of actors and producers, many women have sworn off actors. So we thought we'd bring on one of each, a producer and an actor. So next week, we get to chat with Celluloid Social Club producer Paul Armstrong and actor Brendan Beisner about serial dating and monogamy in the film industry. Plus, we might touch on how do couples who work together keep it together. All this and more next week at Sexy in Van City Radio. And if you have any show ideas or anything, you can always email us at kitten@sexyinvancity.com. One of these days, I will be eventually getting an email account on that site. But until then, stay tuned, and we will keep chatting to you. Keep the communication flowing. Thanks for listening.